The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. Morning. Welcome to the show. Join in at 610 at 770-5633. Nice and early. You know, I'm going to do something this hour. You know, I've often thought about this. You know, we have Diner 62 quizzes and various other giveaways every now and then. And, you know, we always seem to do it between 8 and 9. Now, sometimes it's just because we're kind of busy between 6 and 7. But I want to actually do some giveaways this hour, later this hour. People who wake up early, have a cup of coffee, and it's just like, hey, okay, where's my prize? You know, where's my prize? Okay, so we're going to do something like that. And the Jackson County Fair, of course, the first full day of the Jackson County Fair, it opened last night. And it's going to be going on for the next few days. I will have pairs of tickets to give away along with parking. So I'll pay for your parking, or we'll pay for your parking. You know, KMD and KBXG, we'll get that for you. And we'll be giving those away. We'll give some of those away this hour. And also Medford Rogue tickets, 4 tickets. And we're getting down to the final days of the season. So like a 4-pack of tickets for you. And we'll do it early. And we'll probably do it in the middle of the show. And we'll probably do it late too. Just because I'm just feeling in the mood. Just feeling in the mood today. All right. Looking at what's going on here, power out still. Boy, we had a huge power bump and power outage that ended up zapping out yesterday afternoon. At one point here in Southern Oregon, we had about 5,500 customers that were without power. We have some broadcast facilities that were still without power this morning here, and they got most of it buttoned up and locked down about 9, 10 o'clock last night. Most of it got back. But of the 5,000 that were out, now we still have about 1,300. There's around 800 or so out Grants Pass, Wilderville, getting into that section of Grants Pass. You have outages in Sam's Valley, some in Eagle Point, a handful in Medford, Rogue River, Gold Hill, you know, just a smattering of outings up and down. And for most of this, they're claiming that most of the power is going to be back on by around 11 o'clock or so this morning, and we'll keep you up on that. Now, the thing is, we had the Grant fire that ended up breaking out about just after 4 o'clock. It was in the 4200 block of Grant Road in Central Point. And they have knocked down that fire, ended up being limited to about 12, 15 acres. It ended up burning up some greenhouses and a trailer, and they've lost everything. You know, the homeowners have lost everything there. I guess they have a GoFundMe that is working for them. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. But it all happened at about the same time. Lightning strike, boom, here comes the fire, and then we have these massive outings. But hopefully you've got your power this morning, and if the power is out, I ended up talking to the folks from Pacific Power, and I said, you kind of knee-deep in alligators, right? And the guy on the phone says, you have no idea, is what he's telling me. And it's the wind, and yet it's odd. The wind was actually worse on Monday, in my opinion. At least in my particular neighborhood, wind was worse then. But, yeah, we had wind, lightning, fire, boom, out it goes. And I do not believe that this has anything to do with de-energizing lines during red flag warnings when there's wind blowing things around. I don't think it's anything like that at all. This was just damage that was taken. I know City of Gold Hill took a pretty good hit in some areas, and that's affecting one of our broadcast facilities too. And we're keeping an eye on those sort of things. Once again, electricity is civilization. And so we're back to the uncivilized times until they get that back on. But they are working on it. And thanks for the firefighters, Fire District 3, going out and taking care of the Grant Fire, because it was pretty wind-driven. And had they not gotten to it, it could have been a lot, lots worse than it already was. And by the way, yeah, the evacuations that they had for that got all back down because they knocked it down, got it lined, and things are pretty good. All right. 770-5633, 770-KMED, if you wanted to call in. Just tell me if you're still suffering from some damage from last night, okay? Peter Courtney died, legendary longtime leader of the Oregon State Senate. He passed away yesterday. It was cancer. His family was surrounding him, 81 years old. And I'm going to talk with State Senator Dennis Linthicum, who had cordial relationships with him many years. And I know that Herman Bertschinger always had interesting things to say about Peter, because Peter was the last of the Mohicans. He was the last He was the last what you would call a mainstream Democrat, really, one of the last few that existed. And that even as Senate leader, Senate president, rather, he would just he was always looking to protect the institution and what's best for the state. Say what you will. But Democratic Party, of course, has lurched strongly to the left since his heyday. And it's just pretty nuts. Pretty nuts. But there are a lot of things you can say about Peter Courtney. And, yeah, he's a Democrat, but one of the last of, shall we say, a JFK or better style of Democrat, 81 years old. He truly was one that, you hear all this talk about reaching across the aisle. Courtney was the same. Well, Courtney would do that and really did it. But it wasn't about reaching across the aisle and making sure that you had to completely jettison all your principles in order to join in, you know, as it is right now. Reaching across the aisle right now when you're looking at, for all intents and purposes, total communists half the time on that aisle of the state legislature. All you're going to have to do is say, yeah, I know that, we shouldn't have the state paying to cut off the wee-wees of the boys, you know, when they're 5 years old and they think they're pretty. You know, that sort of thing. But, we're here as Republicans to help the Democrats pass legislation. And the Democrats want to pass that legislation. We have to help them reach across the aisle. All right. Anyway, I don't even want to get into that thing. But Courtney was not one of those types of people. All right. 770-5633. Rogue Community College looking to renew a bond. I guess it wouldn't be raising property taxes. For most of Jackson County, could be raising property taxes in Josephine County about $36 a year because there's already another RCC bond in place. But Kelly Gonzalez put this out that the RCC is going to put a $60 million bond measure on the ballot, Jackson and Josephine counties, November. So it's going to be during the general election. I think all bond measures should be in general elections so everyone's really paying attention. I don't like it when they put all the big important stuff in the in the May primaries, right? When you only have 20% voter turnout at best, maybe 25 if you're lucky, that sort of thing. So we'll see what happens with that particular one. All right. Public comment, by the way, is open on the wildfire hazard map. You know, Senate Bill 762. It's going to be open until August 15th. You know, written comments. You know, email those till August 15th. From what I'm told, they haven't really changed all that much. I might have to talk to Ron Smith about this. Ron Smith has dug into that deep a lot of times and has been part of that fight. And it is a shift show, as it were. But they're going to have public comments. Zoom. Which, in other words, is like saying they're not having a public meeting. Okay, I hate their ideas. They should be going to every city and doing a bunch more of these. True hearings, true testimony. Getting real public input. But just remember, Senate Bill 762, that is the Jeff Golden Depopulate the Rural Lands Again and Make Them Great Act. He doesn't call it that way, but that's what Senate Bill 762 is really all about. Depopulate the rural lands because fire maps and double, triple, quadruple, or cancel your insurance. And oh my gosh, look how green we're going to be now because nobody can afford to live out in the rural lands. You can't get insurance. Instant presto, the Wildlands Project. Coincidence or not, Senator Golden? 19 minutes after 6. What's on your mind? 770-5633. This is the Bill Myers Show on KMED. It's Wheels Up Wednesday. We'll be talking to Eric here real soon, too.
Hi, this is Dwayne Barkley, owner at American Rancher Garage, a full-service auto repair shop. We get numerous questions that begin with, hey, do you work on? So to put it simply, if it's between your license plates, we probably work on that. Call, stop by, or text us through our website at AmericanRancher.com. Stop by Biddle Road, right across the street from Elmer's, or call us at 541-499-6673. American Rancher Garage, we are united through service.
Jasper's Cafe, voted Medford's best burgers for 14 years running. Jasper's has been a local tradition for over 40 years. Come in and see for yourself why we've been recognized nationally for our amazing burgers featuring outrageous toppings and a delicious range of meats from local grass-fed beef to elk to bison and more. We're just 1 mile up North Pacific Highway from the mall, or check out our menu at jasperscafe.com. Jasper's, burgers with attitude.
Is your business or personal tax return under IRS audit? Tell the IRS First Response Resolution has got it. First Response Resolution in Eagle Point, your local tax resolution experts. Visit firstresponseirs.com and talk to Zach in Eagle Point. He'll defend your rights as a taxpayer.
Power outages are becoming more common. Patriot Electric can size you with the correct Generac generator backup system for when outages occur. Whether you need a powerful portable or a whole house system to power your house, barn, shop, and pump house, a flip of a switch will produce power when you need it the most to pump water and provide essentials like AC and refrigeration. Call Patriot Electric and get your own Generac generator, an investment you'll never regret. We are Generac sales, installation, and service professionals. Visit PatriotElectricOregon.com.
Hi, I'm Amber Rose with Siskiyou Pump Service, and I'm on KMED.
Just reminded of, once again, Patriot Electric. They were just talking about the generators for the home, but guess what? They're giving away one on KMED.com. Yep, Patriot Electric, and they'll give away. It's going to be, I guess, the end of July. So go there right now. Go to KMED.com. Look for the Patriot Electric little banner. Click on that. Fill out your name and email and all that sort of good stuff. And, hey, you could win that. And given what's been going on, we're starting to see even more so the need for backup electricity. Let's talk with Cliff. Cliff, you were in that fire zone yesterday. What is that? I ended up getting that alert on Everbridge. What is it? CPT-001. And Linda was saying, "Where? What is that?" I think it's...
That's the zone I'm in, Bill, here. It's north of Pine, west of 99, east of Grant.
Yeah, got it.
Yeah, so I was about a mile and a half away from the fire, so... like I told you when you called me up or picked up here during the break, that I'm on my third outage within 24 hours here in Central Point. And, you know, of course, you never know what's going on. They, you know, they don't tell you. But I would assume that the last one, which was last night, which lasted about 4 hours, was that tree dropping on that power line that started the fire, according to the owner of the property over there.
So when you had the power outage on Monday, was that during the big wind event? Because it was blowing hard.
Yes, and then I had another one last week too. So it was kind of interesting.
Well, if you really want to see power outages, move down to Talent.
I got property down there, so
A listener who called yesterday, Monica, who called yesterday, said her power went out. They actually counted it, the number of times it went out over the last few days, like 28, 29 times. So, yep. So, yeah. I guess we should consider ourselves lucky, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, hey, I want to make a comment about Peter Courtney.
Sure.
I'm registered unaffiliated, so, you know, I vote either way. But I really like Peter Courtney because he, you know, like you said, he was last of the Salt War Democrats. And go back to 2017 when there was a landlord-tenant bill that passed in the House and it went into the Senate. And he was a vote counter, and he would count the votes to see if he would get the bill passed. And there wasn't enough votes. And there was at least two holdouts. One was Betsy Johnson, who was a landlord, and the other one was Rod Monroe, who was also a landlord. And so there was a lot of hue and cry to try to bring the vote up, even though he didn't have the votes to pass it, and he wouldn't do it. So what happened after that is Rod Monroe, he's an East Portland Democrat, was targeted, and Sheema Fagan moved into his district on the sole purpose to run against him, and she won.
And boy, look at how high the corrupt have risen. in this government.
Yeah, that set the stage for her to, you know, run for SOS and then, you know, fall in disgrace from that because she was money hungry. Plus, you know, I watched her in hearings. Boy, she was a wonderment. I could tell right then that she was going on to higher places.
Oh, yeah. You know, she was going to be a star, quote unquote, in that. Hey, appreciate the take on Courtney, too. Thank you so much, Cliff. Hope your power stays on, too. Let me go with former state senator and current Josephine County Commissioner Herman Bertschinger. Herman, you wanted to call in and talk about Peter Courtney, too. You worked with him several years. You were always telling me that that Peter was really good about trying to do the best that could be done within the political reality. Would that be a good way of putting it for him?
Yeah, you know, I had I served with Peter probably through the most tumultuous times in the Senate in the history of Oregon. And I was the Senate Minority Leader. Of course, he was the Senate President. Him and I got along very, very well. And the little secret was, is during those tumultuous times, Peter and I never quit talking, and we were always trying to resolve the problem. And the thing that both of us kept in front of us over the issues was the institution and keeping it working and respecting it. And Peter, it wasn't so much the issues. Peter loved that institution, and he protected it very much. And him and I were lockstep in protecting the institution of the Oregon Senate. And so, yeah, that's kind of a little secret. I was on K2 News last night talking about that. Mm-hmm. And even though when we did the denial of quorum and all that, Peter and I were always talking and trying to figure out a way to put things back together. And I'll tell you what, I watched his caucus absolutely fillet him day after day after day. And Peter took it. It was amazing. I've never seen anything like it. That Democrat caucus just probably wanted him gone as much as they wanted me gone, Bill. It was pretty sad. And
it's a very different Senate caucus these days, isn't it?
Oh, it's so partisan. You know, probably the saddest conversation that I ever had with Peter is he asked me to stop by his office, and which I was there about every day. I came in there, and he's sitting at the end of the table, and he's pretty distressed. And I said, well, what's going on, Peter? And he says, it's all gone. Everything's gone. I said, what are you talking about? He says, the bipartisan is gone. It's gone. It's all gone. And he was pretty upset over that. You know, up until that point, if a boat didn't have bipartisan support, he wouldn't let it come to the floor. So your previous caller was correct. And the story that your previous caller talked about, that was correct, too. And I watched the Democrats go after Ron Monroe. He was a grand old senator. He was there a long time. I worked with Rod on a lot of things, enjoyed him. His wife worked in his office. They were great to work with. And I watched the Democrats just fillet him. And Peter Courtney took a stance. And Peter Courtney funded Rod Monroe's election and everything. But the unions dropped Rod Monroe like a bad habit and mm-hmm. went with Shamia Fagan.
You think of how different the world could have been had Monroe been able to be saved and Fagan not come through. Because I'll tell you, she's done a lot of damage to institutions, too. A whole bunch of damage.
That whole, what it is the Democrat Party's been hijacked by the progressives. Mm-hmm. That's what it is. It's changed.
Well, but this is also why when Peter said that bipartisan was over, this was my complaint about many Republicans who are still, you know, even here in Southern Oregon, you know, they're talking about, well, I need to go there and reach across the aisle, and I just want to be like Batman smacking Robin in that meme on the online, just going, no, you can't do that. You know, it's not the same kind of bipartisanship that we were talking about under someone like Courtney. And in a more rational Democratic Party, if there ever was such a thing, you know what I'm getting at? It's like you know.
No. But it was different. See,
it was different then, though. It was.
Yes. It was a lot different because one thing is there was a problem that came to the Senate. The Democrats and the Republicans both agreed we have a problem. And where the differences came in is the solution, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so you sat down and then you pounded out a solution that everybody could live with. Now the progressives create these problems and then create these solutions that are just, they're just screwy.
Yeah, and reaching across the aisle to okay their legislation is a loser. And, well, as an example, there is really no problem with transgenderism until progressives decided that we're supposed to have the state involved and have the school pushing this, and that if a five-year-old boy doesn't have his stuff cut off, something's wrong with this state. You know, that's the problem that they would present that issue as.
Yeah, so it's so different. You know, I really enjoyed my years in the Senate working with Mark Hass and Betsy Johnson and Lee Beyer and Arnie Roblin and even Doc Bates. They're all great. You could sit down and have a conversation. Peter used to call me in, even as a freshman. The Senate president would call me in, and he'd say, well, I got this bill, and it probably deals with rural Oregon. Tell me why it's a bad bill, is what he used to say.
Uh-huh.
And I would explain it, and sometimes those bills would disappear, and you'd never hear of them again. You know, and
that doesn't happen these days, does it?
No, you know, Peter, when he was a freshman, Denny Jones was in there. Denny Jones was a long-term Eastern Oregon Republican serving, and he told me Denny Jones took him to his real rural ranch out in Gentura, and Peter goes, "Oh my God!" He says, "I was scared all the time. We're out in the middle of nowhere. You know what happens? You know." A hospital's 4 hours away, and mm-hmm. you know,
yeah.
And he goes, it's a different lifestyle. And so Peter got some of those experiences, and I think that really helped him. And before we go, I got to tell you this funny story. You'll get a kick out of it. So Jenny Burdick had this.
Oh, no, not Jenny Burdick. I haven't heard that name for a while. Go ahead. I want to hear this.
She had this crazy gun bill. And it was for having, you know, safety locks on guns. And I'm just like, a gun with a safety lock is not very good for personal protection. I'm sorry. So anyways, Peter called me up to his office, and Burdick was there. And he didn't care much for Burdick and, you know, the women with the red shirts and all that stuff. Peter didn't like that. So Peter says, tell me why this is a bad bill. And Burdick was there, and I was kind of explaining. And then I finally said, I turned to my chief of staff, and I handed him the keys. And I said, go down to the car and there's a box in the back, bring it up here. And so he goes down there, and I had just purchased a new rifle. And he brings this brand new rifle up in a box. Mm-hmm. And I showed him, opened the box because I was explaining to Peter and Jenny about how guns work. They don't even know how they work. Okay. Peter has never touched a gun in his life.
Yeah. But yet they're passing laws on it. Right.
Right. So I opened this box up and I pull this gun out, this rifle out, and the staff, they go, is it going to go off? And I'm just like shaking my head. I said, you people. And I held the gun up by the barrel in the air. And I said, see this, Peter? See this, Jenny? You know what this is right now? It's a club because there's no bolt in it. I said, this is a club. That's all it is. And so I explained to him how a gun works, a bolt action gun works.
Yeah, bolt action, yeah.
And we talked about some other things. And you know what? That bill disappeared.
Interesting.
So those are a lot of things that go on. But during those weeks of denial of quorum and everything, Peter and I were on the phone every day, several times a day, trying to figure it out. He knew what I had to do. He used to always say, I know what you got to do. But he also had a job to do, and it was always trying to figure out how to accomplish, you know, the functions of the Senate. And in fact, when we had that, we came back in the last 2 days and we had all those bills to pass. They were mostly mundane bills. They're appropriation bills, most of them. And Peter says, Herman, how are we going to do this? We only got 2 days. We got 200 and some bills to pass. I said, Peter, I said, you tell your people don't speak on the bills. I'll tell my people don't speak on the bills. They were just mundane bills, appropriation bills. And we passed 100 and some bills in one day. Peter never seen anything like it in his life.
But you both agreed to shut up, essentially, right?
We both agreed to shut up and pass these bills because it was for the state of Oregon. It was to keep it running. It was to appropriate all, you know, to do the things that the Senate does. And so we got it done. And he was just amazed. And at the end of that session, I was having coffee with him in his office. We signed, he died and everything. And that was the year of cap and trade and all that stuff. And it didn't dawn on me when he said it, what he meant. It took a while for it to sink in, but we're having coffee. He looked at me and he just said, you won. And I didn't realize what he said at the time, how important that was to him. But that was probably the biggest compliment I had in my 8 years in the Senate.
But it was also because you ended up getting the caucus together to walk, too. And that's a big deal. That was a big deal. There was huge. But, of course, look at the damage that happened to everybody that did that now, right?
Well, yeah, but that wasn't Peter Courtney advocating for
that. No, it wasn't.
That was Jenny Burdick advocating for that.
Very good.
Jenny Burdick was the one that got that got the unions to get the signatures to get that on the ballot.
Yeah, don't miss Jenny, I must say, all right?
Nope.
All right. Hey, Harmon, I appreciate the look back, and thanks for sharing that story about the late Senator Courtney, okay? You be well.
Yep, thank you.
All right. 6:36, Eric Peters joins me on Wheels Up Wednesday here in just a moment after news. Coming up on KMED and KPXG.
Life's busy, and off is not an option. You need to be on the water, on the call, on the road. Life's waiting. Power on with Batteries Plus. Visit one of over 700 locations today.
Stephen Westfall Roofing, Inc., specializing in new roofing construction and re-roofing. Their mission is to make sure each and every client can sleep at night, knowing they have a roof over their head that lasts and will keep them protected. Call 941-3736. CCB 230-804.
Latest news brought to you by locally owned and operated Artisan Bakery Cafe in South Medford. It's a full-service cafe offering breakfast, lunch, and specialty coffees. You'll be wowed one bite at a time.
From the KMED News Center, here's what's going on. A 15-acre grass fire just east of the outskirts of Central Point caused level 2 evacuation notices Tuesday afternoon, shortly after 4. It has now been knocked down and is in mop-up. The cause is being investigated. It was fought on the ground and in the air. Last night, just before 9, all evacuation notices were lifted. Former Oregon Senate President Peter Courtney has died at the age of 81 of cancer. Courtney served a total of 38 years in the legislature, making him the longest-serving legislator in state history. He was Senate President for 20 years. The software industry that brought so many people to Oregon from Silicon Valley is tanking. The cratering started 2 years ago, and now software employment in Oregon is down 7.4%. Among the issues is venture capital in Oregon startups fell sharply. Multnomah County now has one of the highest personal income taxes for high earners in the nation, and few entrepreneurs are starting tech companies in Oregon. Bill London, KMED.
6:38, Eric Peters joining me here in just a couple of minutes. I'm looking here at the price of gold, Burt's Gold page on Lou Rockwell. $54.79. That's about $40 more than it was yesterday. Another all-time high. We're up about 0.5% just this morning. And I find it interesting, the financial people are going, well, it's going up because gold is going up because of the assumption that the Fed is going to cut interest rates later this year. No, it's a little more complex than that. Just a interest rate cut, after all of this, is not going to make gold go up. It is the realization that no matter whether it is Orange Man Trump or Mummified Joe in the Oval Office, the financial instability of the dollar, the debt, the huge debt, and the trajectory is pretty much baked in the cake right now. And central banks are buying gold hand over fist right now. Big money is buying gold hand over fist here right now. And maybe you should consider preserving some wealth, too. Go to J. Austin & Company Gold and Silver Buyers in Ashland at 1632 Ashland Street, 6th and G in downtown Grants Pass. They are the people that understand these. This is where I've been buying and trading gold and silver. They also buy and trade platinum and diamonds and other precious items. Also connected with the States, they'll help you with that too. Call 482-3715 for your appointment. Appointments are really nice. In fact, I have an appointment that I'm going to be going in there tomorrow and getting some myself, all right? But one way or the other, you just drop by 1632 Ashland Street by appointment at 6th and G in downtown Grants Pass. JAustinBrokers.com, GrantsPassCoins.com, FortuneReserve.com at Jay Austin.
Hey, it's all fireworks and Fords and 4th of July here at Butler Ford and Truck Center in Ashland. Joel here for our giant 4th of July sale. I still have a few Ford F-150s for only $445 a month. Tow your boat or camper this summer with a new Ford F-150 and pay only $445 a month. Butler Ford also has 2.9% financing lined up on our Ford Escapes. Not for 48 months, not for 60 months, but 72 months financing at 2.9. If I had more time, I'd tell you about the low payments and low rates we also have on our Ford Edges, Broncos, Mach-Es, well, everything on the lot. Butler says yes to $445 a month on a new F-150. Butler says yes to 2.9% financing for 72 months. Butler says yes to big 4th of July sale discounts. Butler Ford and Truck Center, just 12 short minutes south of Medford, right off of exit 19, where you already know. We got your truck, SUV, certified pre-owned, hybrid, and EV.
36-month lease payments at 7,500 miles per year with 7,500 cash or trade due at signing, excluding tax, license, title, and 250 dealer dock fee with vehicle cap cost of $42,884. 72-month payments of $15.15 per thousand finance. All financing on approved credit.
Welcome back to the Bill Myers Show, 106.3 KMED.
This is the Bill Myers Show, Wheels Up Wednesday. Eric Peters, automotive journalist, slash genius, slash overall good guy in rural Virginia. Rural Virginia, who is probably looking on amazingly, at what's going on in the news these days. Eric, welcome back. How are things, my friend?
I'm good, Bill. Thanks for having me. Boy, what an eventful several days, eh?
Yeah. What were you doing when Orange Man got shot, huh?
Well, actually, we were out on the motorcycle. We've been out all afternoon. I mean, we got back, and then I noticed my phone was blowing up. And all my friends were saying, you better turn on the news. So we turned on the news and got clued into to the goings-on.
Yeah, we had a sit-down dinner that we were getting ready for. And then all of a sudden, a sister-in-law calls and says, Trump was shot. And then we go back there. And we do something that we never do at a sit-down dinner when the friends came over. We all just dragged the table out in the living room and we're watching the TV coverage. Yes, it was just astounding. You had a very interesting take on that. And, of course, I've read so many pundits. Just, we know that things look fishy. The whole thing looks kind of fishy. And we can't even add anything to that right now. But what I found interesting was watching President Trump last night at the DNC and even watching him as some of the speeches were given. And he's changed. This changed him. And I would dare say he's aged about a decade just over the weekend.
Yeah.
You can see it on his face, and I'm hoping that he's able to heal from this. I mean, it's a big deal. It's a big deal when all of a sudden, you know, you're riding high, and then boom, you know, out it goes, right? Out rings the shot.
Well, it's a harrowing experience, and, you know, what happened was certainly binary, in my opinion, in that it was either the result of almost unbelievable incompetence or something far more malignant than that. And either way, I'm sure that has caused Trump to ruminate and think over what may happen going forward. And, you know, one of the aspects of this to me is just so incredibly astounding is that on the one hand, the left has been all but advocating for his summary execution for years.
Absolutely. Well, you hear the term literal Hitler all the time when they talk about President Trump.
And then you get this faux contrition, you know, political violence is unacceptable. Says the senile man as he reads the teleprompter. And it's just so obviously stage-managed, facetious, false. Everybody understands that. So if anything, this has made the Orange Man stronger again. It's just incredible that every day seems to be that they try something to diminish him or even to exterminate him, and he comes back even stronger. He's become a phenomenon of historic proportions, whether you like him or not.
I wonder in some ways if if you know you end up surviving an assassination attempt like that, and it is so harrowing and it is so life changing, and you realize how close. I mean, you know, just turning his head and reading those statistics to his right is one of that what ended up saving his life, really.
Yep.
And,
yep.
And just that, because otherwise the back of his head would have been vaporized. That's just the way you know it would have been had
sure,
he not.
Now you've got that iconic Iwo Jima photo now of him rising up and shaking his fist, which, by the way, you know, I laud him for doing that. But the Secret Service, oh, my God, they didn't know whether the shooter had been neutralized or whether there was more than another shooter. So they let their target stand up in and potentially get shot again. You probably remember when Reagan got shot back in, I guess, 1980 or
81. Oh, yeah, he was carried out like a sack of potatoes by the legs and arms, wasn't he?
That's what they're supposed to do. But, you know, these DEI people, I'm sorry, you know, I'm not going to join in the praise of the Secret Service. What happened there was grotesque and unacceptable. And, of course, once again, there's no accountability. You know, there are all of these obloquies that are provided. Oh, you know, we're going to make sure they have the necessary resources. No, somebody needs to be fired and gotten rid of and held to account for what happened, period. It's not about, it's not even about the orange man. People who care about the senile man should be equally concerned.
I know Kimberly Cheadle, who runs that agency, or supposedly runs that agency after having been at Pepsi. Okay. Well, yeah, she was doing security at Pepsi, to be fair, but still.
Yeah, I mean, she still has a job. And you know as well as I do that this the same media that went that talked about how, oh, there were popping noises. You know, it's like my friend Brian Hyde said the other day, it would be like if we went back to 1865 and the media reported that it looks like Abe Lincoln has taken a nap at Ford's Theater.
Yeah, some of the headlines were just incredible. Trump hustled off of stage after being startled by noises. That was my favorite one. By noises.
We haven't heard a peep about a threat to our democracy, much less acts of terrorism.
Yeah, well, I mean, they finally came around to admitting what it was, but probably because they had no choice. They were forced to. Yeah. I think it would have much preferred to have just, oh, look, Trump was chicken, you know, that sort of thing.
Sure, and, you know, they have been able to suss out old ladies who happened to be in the general vicinity of the Capitol on January 6th, who just happened to be standing there. They get a visit from the FBI. But these leftists can go on public forums. And mind you, I'm not in any way saying that free speech should be suppressed or criminalized. I'm just pointing out the hypocrisy. And they can get on there and say, well, next time don't miss. Mm. And nothing happens.
In your latest on EP Autos, which is Orange Man Down, you raised what I thought was a pretty thought-provoking question because he has changed. And I know that he has completely rewritten his speech for Thursday night. And what he was talking about before, I guess, was just going to be bashing Joe Biden and bashing and just going after Joe.
Yeah.
And apparently he's not going there. And he's is rewriting it for a completely different point of view, which I'll be interested to hear. I really will be. But what you were wondering about is after his experience over the last 3-4 years, 6 years, 7 years, really, of lawfare, you know, it wasn't going on, if he might be taking a nuanced take on people being unjustly prosecuted for most anything in this country. What are you thinking?
Well, I hope so. I hope that he's become more thoughtful. You know, unlike the senile man who's no longer capable of thought and recognizes that there has been a great deal of injustice done to people for no particular reason at all, just because they found themselves in the crosshairs of the system. You know, the January 6th people, for example, that's a very good case in point. And that he is in a position now to become their defender. If he should manage to get elected.
I also think about certain things that he said in the last administration when he was in the administration. He was the administration. And I would mention this because I'm a big Second Amendment absolutist. I mean, that's one of my single issues, where I'm one of my big issues here. And I remember when he went after bump stocks, and I said he doesn't have the power to do this. The agency doesn't have the power to do this. I said that back then. I still destroyed the bump stock because everybody knew noisily that I had one. And I didn't want to be the test case because, hey, I got a family. You know, this is the way things work out there. But then when he said also about, you know, take the guns and due process later, words to that effect. And I was thinking, whoa, you know. And I'm kind of wondering if after all these years he looks back at those kind of decisions and statements and thinks, maybe I got to reconsider this.
Well, I hope so. And I hope he doesn't reconsider them in the opposite direction. That's one of the reasons I'm very interested to hear his speech, because after all, you know, he was just the target of an attempted assassination by an unhinged kid who had an AR-style rifle. So will he now become an advocate for sensible gun control measures? It really is a crucible moment for him and for us, and I hope that he's not going to go in the wrong direction on this issue.
All right, very good. Eric Peters with me this morning. If you have a question or comment, maybe a question about a vehicle, just go ahead and jump in. Number here is 770-5633-770-KMED. I had a listener who wrote me this morning and wanted me to ask you this question, so I'm going to do it, Eric. And it was from Betty. Betty says, Bill, can you ask Eric, if you have a $50,000 budget for an SUV that would comfortably fit 5 to 6 adults for a road trip, you know, what would you choose? What are your favorites out there? I know that you tend to get thrown a lot of compact crossovers all the time, but what about, you know, I guess when you're talking about 5 to 6 comfortably, you're probably talking about full size, right?
Yeah, you're probably talking about something like a Chevy Tahoe or a Suburban. Those would be my go-tos. There are some others on the market that are decent alternatives, but the Chevy still has that very reliable GM V8, which, you know, is the centerpiece of it, in my opinion.
Okay, so they still have the V8. I just want to make sure they're not using the 4.68 thing anymore, right? They don't do that?
The variable displacement?
Yeah.
No, they do have cylinder deactivation. You can't avoid that, unfortunately. That's part of the package. But still, you don't have turbos and six cylinders and all of that other stuff, or a mild hybrid configuration, which unfortunately, you know, a lot of them have gone to. I would otherwise recommend something like a Sequoia or even a Tundra, you know, if you're going to go for a big quad cab truck or something like that. But Toyota's gotten rid of its brilliant V8, which is one of the best V8s on the market, in favor of the new 3.5-liter twin-turbo V6. And maybe it'll prove to be a great engine, but we won't know that until down the road. So being conservative, I wouldn't want to be the guinea pig who buys into that. I'd rather wait and see what happens.
Because even Toyota has made some mistakes in some of their engines. It's well known, because nobody's perfect, that sort of thing.
Yep.
Although I must say that 2002 4Runner we have, I don't think we could kill it.
No, exactly. You know, that is an excellent vehicle. And, you know, until now, and again, of course, they've just updated. I love that word.
Uh-huh.
It's one of my favorite curse words, because it usually means worse rather than better. You can't get the V6 in that model anymore either. It's now got a Turbo 4.
Wow.
And, you know, that for me is a deal killer. I don't know whether that Turbo 4 is going to prove to be good. I like the V6, which I know to be good.
But I think that what was great about the V6 is that, no, the V6 was not what I would call a screaming performer, normally aspirated, but it was not a highly stressed engine. And I think that's also why it has racked up so many hundreds of thousands of miles for many customers who have them, that kind of thing.
Yeah, just a very durable, very reliable 300,000-mile engine if you change the oil regularly and don't abuse the thing. You know, I mean, do you buy a 4Runner or a Tacoma because it gets to 60 in 4 seconds? I don't.
No, indeed you don't. So I thought that was, so we're going to suggest to Betty then you're looking for GMC, Sequoia, or no, that'd be a Toyota Sequoia.
I would say Chevy, you know, Chevy Tahoe. You know,
Chevy Tahoe.
Kind of upmarket version of that brand under the GMC label. I would stick with the Chevy. It's the same vehicle, and it's going to cost you less.
All right. Now, I remember in the mid-2000s of those Chevy engines, they had problems with the cylinder deactivation. Did they get that solved? Is that okay now?
Apparently, yeah. Now, optionally in that vehicle, you can get the 6.2 V8, which is the one I would go for. You know, it's very powerful, and it's a great vehicle to drive with that engine. But the 5.3 engine is by no means a slouch, and it might be perfectly adequate for what you need the vehicle to do.
All right, very good. Eric Peters with me, 770-5633. By the way, I'm sorry, I had a couple of calls came in and they dropped off. Go ahead and jump back in if you wanted to talk with Eric, and we'll talk about some other reviews and a couple of articles before we take off. This is the Bill Meyer Show. Hi, this is Bill Meyer, and I'm with Charisse from No Wires Now, your Dish Premier local retailer. It's time to switch to Dish.
If you have DirecTV or cable TV, call me today to see how I can save you money. Plus, I'll lower your internet and cell phone bills.
And those offers in the mail from Dish, you can go through No Wires Now for those.
Call me at 541-680-5875.
Call Charisse like I did, or visit their showroom off Biddle Road in Medford. NoWiresNow.com. Restrictions apply. Call for details. Internet and cell phone service not provided by Dish.
If you're remodeling your house, start with the foundation. Millett Construction offers a no-pressure, thorough inspection of your home's foundation and a no-obligation estimate if your house needs work. The foundation is most important because all of the repairs and upgrades you're planning, from the floors, windows, doors, cabinets, even the roof, can be affected if your foundation is unstable. Be sure you're on solid ground. Millett Construction will level your house and correct the shifting soil problem. Visit MillettConstruction.com.
1063 KMED. This is the Bill Meyer Show.
Eric Peters at epautos.com. Like I said, reading it all the time. You got a brand new article up there this morning. I know you were talking about how great the Chevys and those GMCs were if you're looking for that big, meaty SUV for Betty. But GM has another problem, though. They missed the million vehicle mark. What was that? What was that all about?
Well, you know, GM bought in, like so many of the other manufacturers have, to this EV boondoggle. And they were saying as recently as a year ago that by next year, they expect to be selling a million of the things. Well, it turns out last year, they only managed to offload something like 73,000 of them. And to put that in perspective, Cadillac, the entire division, sells about 147,000 vehicles. So they've only sold about half as many EVs as Cadillac has sold vehicles. And, of course, the reason for that is that they're expensive. But it goes deeper than that. When you pay top dollar for something, you know, like you buy a first-class ticket for an airplane,
yeah,
part of the reason is, hey, I got a nicer seat and I get a better meal. But the big reason is the convenience. You don't have to stand in the same cattle queue line. You get on the plane first and you get off the plane first. There's nothing crappier than spending $50,000 plus on a vehicle and finding you're going to get to spend the next half hour at a Sheetz while the proletariat in their 20-year-old vehicles fill up in less than 5 minutes and are back on their way.
Yeah, something doesn't quite jibe with that that MSRP, does it? Right?
Yeah, and you know this is reflected in the fact that something like 40-45% of the first-time EV buyers have said they're not going back. So we've got a real problem here, Houston, if you're an EV guy, because on the one hand, the market has basically been tapped out. Almost all the people who would want and can afford an EV have bought one. And so now you've got about half the market that doesn't want another one. So where are you going to find buyers for all these EVs that are being pushed onto the market by the mandates? You know, the market isn't driving this. The manufacturers are building these vehicles as compliance cars to meet the federal requirements. And the rubber's going to hit the road really soon,
yeah.
I think, and it's going to be an epic flop.
I'll continue to hammer away, and before we go to the calls, I'll continue to hammer away that had electric vehicles been allowed to organically grow the market just for where they best served it, I'm thinking about my wife, Linda, and I took a look at her odometer, has an 06 vehicle, and she only has 45,000 miles on it. So she drives about not even quite 3,000 miles a year, right?
Mm-hmm.
You want to talk about someone who would have been perfect for an inexpensive electric go-around-town vehicle, would have been perfect for someone like her.
Absolutely.
Right? But you really weren't allowed to buy it. Or when they did make them, like those Chevy Spark EVs, too expensive. Too expensive, right?
Yeah, not only are they not being manufactured, they are being prevented from being sold. As we've talked about previously, there are sub-$10,000 basic EV appliances available elsewhere, but Biden has come out very explicitly and said that they're going to use all of the power of the federal government to make sure that Americans can't buy them, and the few that they may be able to buy, the price is going to be jacked up through the roof via the imposition of all these tariffs and taxes.
Which also tells you that it's never been about getting Americans into EVs.
Yes.
It's about getting Americans out of cars and into a bus.
Right.
Yeah.
And, of course, also into debt and ultimately into poverty, which is the long-term agenda here.
All right. 657, Eric Peters with me this morning. And if you're holding on, here we go. We'll start with the call, 770-5633. And good morning. Hi. Who's this? Welcome.
Hey, Bill, David.
David, welcome back.
Hey, I there's a joke I heard recently about from another mechanic, and he told me, basically when Obama, the Obama year Chevys, like 2008 and up, you know, the reliability started to suffer. Because Eric's right, you know, Chevy was the stalwart, reliable American truck, you know, forever. And I know all the companies are kind of going the same way, but I think in the last few years, I got to be honest, I'm so disappointed that they've taken these trucks that they've built essentially really similar, you know, basically building the same truck for a long time, about 20 years. Eric knows this. And
Yep. They've
taken simple components like, you know, rubber hoses and belts and radiators, and they've made the same part so much cheaper. I have customers that aren't getting, 5 years or 50,000 miles out of these parts on these Chevy trucks, and they're having to put a lot of money into really simple stuff that never used to break, you know, even 10 years ago.
Yep,
really,
it's an industry-wide problem. It's not just General Motors.
It is industry-wide.
Cutting stuff.
Well, I think about that Chrysler of mine. I needed a radiator at 90,000 miles. Really did. Remember that? You know that car, David. You've seen it, right?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. And I was joking with another friend of mine who owns a shop last night. He actually called me around 7. He's working on an old 97 Caravan, and he's talking about what the repair is going to cost. And I said, you know, it's kind of funny. All those old cars, you know, we laughed about them. They probably scrapped them during the, you know, cash for clunkers. But you'll be able to keep those cars on the road. I've been saying this for a while. You'll be able to keep those cars on the road years, you know, almost indefinitely compared to the things that they're building now. And Eric's right. It is industry-wide. But I was just so sad because I own a lot of I've owned Chevys. And just to take something that was so reliable and so easy to fix and make problems where there weren't problems, it just really disappointed me.
All right. Hey, David, I appreciate it. Of course, David is a mechanic, and he knows his stuff. By the way, very good mechanic. We appreciate you checking in here, David.
You know, part of the issue here, too, is that it's kind of paradoxical in that GM and the other manufacturers, most of them, made their vehicles so well, they got to be so reliable, that people finally recognized, and I have a column coming out about this, by the way, that they don't need to get a new vehicle every 5 or 6 years. That, wow, look, 100,000 miles, this thing is running as well as it did when it had 10,000 miles. I'm going to keep it. They don't want that. They want you to be buying a new vehicle much more often than people are. They've now got to figure out a way to make vehicles less reliable in order to get people to buy them sooner rather than later.
Yeah, well, it really is the plan. It's almost like a return to the planned obsolescence. So I'll give you an example, just a personal one. My mother had a 1992 Pontiac Bonneville with that incredible 3,800cc V6, the V6 that you just can't kill. It was just like the best engine that General Motors ever made.
Yep.
And the only thing that made that car go away, because she ended up selling it to my son, and the thing is, too much of the body supports ended up rusting out underneath it.
Yep.
It was from Chicago. It was a vehicle that had been in Chicago. And it's like the drivetrain would have still been running, but everything else around it was falling apart.
That 231 Buick V6, 3.8 liters, that was developed in the mid-late 70s, overhead valves, two valves, pushrod engine, was indestructible. It would just go and go and go and go.
All right.
And now it's gone, which is a tragedy.
And now, so that was indestructible. What is... in your driveway right now that you've been testing, what's the latest one you've been...
Well, it's at the best of times and it's the worst of times. It hasn't arrived yet, but I'm getting the last Camaro. You probably have heard.
General Motors
has decided to kill the Camaro off. Really, really sad after all these years. So it's going to be a bittersweet week with the Camaro, and I'll have a review about it on the site at some point over the next several days.
Okay. Well, looking forward to seeing that, and we'll talk about it. We'll wax poetic one way or the other. So the final, now is it the final Camaro, or is it maybe just the final gas-powered Camaro, and then it turns into a device after
that? No, it looks like they're not going to attempt to electrify it, which is, to their credit. I wrote something about that a couple of months ago. I'm glad to see that at least they're going to let it leave the field with its dignity intact and not turn it into a parody of itself. The idea of a Camaro without an engine I'm not even going to go there without the comparisons that I could make on the air.
Yeah, an engine with a motor does not count. I had a friend that just sent me a picture this morning of one of his customers driving around a vehicle, a 1969 Camaro 427.
And I was thinking, what a gorgeous car.
Oh, and I remember there was a fellow in a high school, a kid in high school, who had one of those or something very similar to it. And even though I was driving my dad's Cadillac, I would look at that Camaro Supersport, and I would just drool over it.
It's just like I draw the parallel with the Volkswagen Beetle. There was a time when Beetles were everywhere, and there was a time when Camaros were everywhere. And people always had a smile on their face when they saw a Beetle, even if they didn't own one, because it was just an appealing car. Same thing with the Camaro. I've owned 5, by the way, in my lifetime. And both are going to be gone now, and not for natural reasons. The reason the Volkswagen was taken off the market was because it couldn't comply anymore with all of the various federal folderol, and similar reasons are to blame for the departure of the Camaro.
Which I must say is, if you have the remaining ones, it's making them more expensive. By the way, did you see the video of my 0-60 in 49 seconds that I sent you the other day?
I did. Hold on to your helmet. Were you wearing your gloves? And did you have your tracksuit on?
Yeah, I didn't tell listeners about this, but over the weekend I tested out the GPS speedometer on the Rogue Valley Expressway, 0-60, and I counted, it was like 49 seconds, 0-60. And I'll tell you, that 55-60 miles an hour, Eric, that took a long time.
I was just going to say, most of that was probably getting from 50-60.
Yeah, and 0-50, no problem. 50-60, oh my gosh, you can have a cup of coffee and sit back and wait for the...
Once you're rolling, it's fine, and as long as you're active and prepared to move. My truck is by no means a speed demon, but I find that I have no problem keeping up with traffic because I'm paying attention.
I'm ready
when the light goes green.
That's right. Eric, always great talking with you. We'll catch you next to Wednesday. I'm looking forward to hearing about the last Camaro.
Yep.
Okay? You be well.
Thanks, Bill.
EPautos.com. Go there, support the site. Be a commenter on there, too. A lot of good conversation goes on there. 4 after 7, this is KMED and KMED HD1, Eagle Point Medford, and KBXG Grants Pass.